a list ranking the most livable cities in the world. And apparently these rankings are determined by various factors, that the city's economic stability, its health services, its education services, its infrastructure, culture, environment, all these things. And apparently, according to the EIU, the Economist Intelligence Unit, Melbourne was the most livable city in the world from 2011 to 2017. Go Melbourne. But to make us all feel better, the Deutsche Bank also published a list of the most livable cities and found that our city, Wellington, in 2017 and 2018 is or was the most livable city in the world. Oh, boys and girls are going to Christ for Christ. I'm sorry. Sorry, Brenda. Guessing I'm going to be forgetting that forever. So there we have it, lists of cities, most livable cities in the world, Melbourne, Wellington, and I think clearly the weather and the risk of seismic activity, the lack of AFL were not factors in that list. What makes life livable where you live? What makes life livable wherever you live? And why? What is the basis for the livable life in the world? The human way, the way of the EIU and the Deutsche Bank, is to select arbitrary factors on the basis of what we see, what benefits us. But to make the Christian life livable requires a different set of eyes. To make the Christian life livable requires a different way of seeing. And that's what we find here in chapter 13 of Genesis. Here in chapter 13 of Genesis, we're presented with another tension. It sets the scene for subsequent chapters, the chapters that follow. But before we get there, we have this account of Abram and Lot. And the structure of this chapter is similar to the tension that we saw in the previous section where Abram and Sarai went to Egypt. There was a problem. There was an attempted resolution. There was an outcome. And here we see two ways of living. Two ways of looking at the world, two ways of pursuing blessing. And those two ways are faith, by faith or by sight. So that's our theme this morning as we consider chapter 13, faith or sight. And we'll look at it under three headings. Firstly, conflict. Secondly, separation. Then thirdly, confirmation. So firstly then, conflict. Abram, we're told, returns a much wealthier man than what he left Canaan. And you'd think that'd solve his problems. that's often how we think. Just a little bit more and my problems, they just disappear. Just a little bit more and then I'm content. The sure path to blessing, we often think, is the accumulation of things. But here we see simply having more, it doesn't solve one's problems, but opens up other ones. Lot also owns flocks and herds and tents, we're told in verse 5. And it's interesting here, there's a distinction between the two. There's a distinction between Abram and a distinction between Lot and what they own. And that's showing to us that Lot is got his own household. Lot's got his own estate. Distinct from Abram. Lot is still the Abram's brother's son and not his son. Not his descendant, not his seed. But now we see this conflict arise in the camp of Lot and Abram. And we can imagine perhaps what this tension and strife might look like. Or might have looked like. A bit like siblings sharing a bedroom. And it's a confined space and you've got this stuff and you've heard the arguments. Your stuff's in my space. Well, you've got too much stuff. Put your stuff that way. Mom, Dad, I need my own room. So this kind of tension's going on here. They've outgrown their capacity to live side by side. Well, you ought to note that it's not because of the land. Not that there's anything wrong with the land itself. Abram's household has grown considerably in chapter 14. He musters an army of 318 men born in his house. That's a considerable camp. But we're also told the Canaanites and Perizzites were dwelling in the land. That is, they are there first. Their options for settling are quite limited and the frustrations are boiling over. Now, at this point, we're not going to make too much of this conflict. It sets the scene for what follows, but here we're just going to simply notice in passing, being very rich is no guarantee of blessing. It's no guarantee of happy relationships. In fact, it can be a symptom of living by sight. And that plays out in the quarrels that we have over things. Sometimes the more you have, the more you have to fight over. So remaining together is untenable for Abram and Lot, and this conflict calls for a resolution. Just as the famine called for action in the previous section, so we see a resolution put forward here in, secondly, their separation. And this word separate occurs three times from in this section, verse 9, separate yourself from me. Verse 11, they separated from each other. Verse 14, after Lot had separated. Notice how very similar it is to the command that God gave Abram. Way back in verse 1 of chapter 12. Go from your country, your kindred, and your father's house. This is the last remnant of the house of Terah departing. Abram generously gives first choice to Lot to select where he is going to live. Abram assures that he will not muscle in on Lot's territory. If you go there, I will go here. But we see the contrast come up in this potential solution in verse 10. Lot lifted up his eyes. What does Lot see? Lot sees the Jordan Valley, that it is well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord. That is like it's like Eden. It's like paradise. And it's like the land of Egypt, that place where Abram scored all his riches. Now, the Jordan Valley in this area, it's today very, very hot. It's very dry in some places, but access to water is very, very easy. There are natural springs in parts of the Jordan Valley. The city of Jericho is one of the most ancient cities in the world. And it's built there around these springs, and they are abundant springs. It's in close proximity to the Jordan River, and it's likely that in ancient times it flowed a good deal better than what it does today. There are also water is also accessed through wadis on both sides of the valley, from the Israeli side and also on the Jordanian side. When it rains up in the mountains, that water comes down and flows into the valley. It's warm and it's hot year round. You have long growing seasons. There are no bitter winters, no frightfully cold southerlies. It's the kind of place where your tomatoes and your cucumbers grow in winter. And in summer, you enjoy dates by the bucketful. It's flat. You can ride your chariot through there. It has good access to trade. It ticks the boxes on Lot's livability scale. It's the nearest thing to paradise. And yet there's a problem with it. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. The cities of the valley were cities where there were great sinners against the Lord. You know, what Lot saw is often what we see as the ideal. But what Lot saw is often what we think of as the good life. When we were planning to move to New Zealand way back in 2011, we would browse properties on Trade Me, and we did that quite extensively. We looked at lifestyle blocks in the Waikato, where it's nearly always green. We were looking for something that was quiet, something that was spacious, but not too big. Something with fruit trees, somewhere you could grow your veggies, somewhere you could have your chickens and a couple of cows, and all this, and having no clue about how to run a lifestyle block at all. But it just looked ideal. It sounded ideal. And I wonder, when you think of the ideal, what does it look like? The ideal is often that place we go to in our mind when things are less than ideal. That place we go to when conflict is imposing itself in our life and our livability. When your workplace just seems toxic and there is constant stress and your mind goes to, what's the ideal? And we tend to go to that place where we sense no pressures, no strife. We have the time to do what we really want to do. And at times, the ideal can seem to be anywhere except here, anywhere except the now. Anywhere is better than where we are. Lot lifted up his eyes and he saw what he thought was the good life, the well-watered valley. He hoped for Eden but found Sodom. And we'll see how that plays out in the coming chapters. But the thing is this, the same happens wherever we go. Whenever we are living by sight. There were still going to be Canaanites in where Abraham lived too. I'm sure I'm not the only one who wonders at times, you know, what's our future going to be like? What's our society going to be like? Where is it going? What are we going to do if it all falls apart? Where are we going to search for our Eden? Lot looked up and thought he found Eden, but found Sodom. You see, we won't find Eden in the world. Not with the eyes of sight. Eden needs to be revealed. Eden needs to be given. And so thirdly, then, we have a confirmation. After Lot had separated from him, you'll notice the Lord speaks to Abraham and tells him, lift up your eyes. And when God calls Abraham to lift up his eyes, he repeats the promises that he's already given to him. He confirms his promises to Abram. The promise he made in verse 7 of chapter 12, to your offspring I will give this land. But here the promise is expanded. Here the promise grows. Here it just broadens. It's getting bigger. He calls Abram to live with the eyes of faith. The place where you are, look north, south, east, west, look in every direction. Look around you. This land I will give to you. And your offspring I will make as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring can also be counted. His offspring is going to be innumerable. We might think that after Lot chose the valley with its well-watered cities, and that Abram was simply getting the leftovers. But this is what is said of the land in Deuteronomy 11. Listen to this. From verse 10, for the land that you are entering to take possession of it is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, where you sowed your seed and irrigated it, like a garden of vegetables. But the land that you are going over to possess is a land of hills and valleys that drinks water by the rain from heaven. A land that the Lord your God cares for. The eyes of the Lord your God are always upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. You see, it's not the quality of the land or its resources that God is calling Abram to look at. To trust him. Not its ability to grow veggies and produce fruit. He's calling Abraham to look at what God himself is going to do in that land. And what God is going to do, what he's going to give, will be vast. It will be abundant. Will be much more, much better than what Lot sees. Sodom looms large on the horizon for Lot, as does God's judgment. But here, God promises offspring and land to Abram, offspring and a nation from whom would come God's Messiah. Offspring and a nation from whom would come the Messiah who would bear that judgment that was hanging over Sodom. Through this promise that's been given to Abram, would come the Messiah who would bear our judgment. And what's being prefigured here in these promises is a return to the real Eden. The place where God dwells, the place where his people know his blessing, where he is with his people. And so, receiving this promise, Abram responds by building an altar to the Lord. That's what it means to live by faith and not sight. is that we see how God was working to restore blessing in the world and how he was going to bestow it on his people, and that we would respond to his promise with eyes of faith, submission to him, receiving his gift through faith, in the pursuit of the ideal. It's not well-watered cities that we need. It's God's word. It's God's promise of restoration. God's promise of blessing in his son, Jesus. His word is true. His word is trustworthy. He fulfills his promise his way and not ours. And that will be what makes life livable wherever you live. You see, the most livable cities in the world are not Melbourne. It's not Wellington. They have their advantages. They have their things we enjoy, things we love. They might resemble Eden at times. But without God's promise, they're like Sodom. Apart from God's promise, there is no blessing. There is only judgment. But when we know God's promise, when we know the richness of his promise as he fulfills it in his son, when we know the wonder of his grace, the goodness, the faithfulness of his character, the depth of his love and his mercy, the power he has over death, over life. It's what makes life livable wherever you live. And so he calls us to lift our eyes. Lift our eyes to him. Look to Jesus and live by faith, not by sight. Amen. We'll stand together and sing in response. Number 491, Fight the Good Fight. We'll sing all the verses.